Randall Kennedy, your new book, Sell Out, about racial loyalties and arguments within a group, pushes me to one simple question. What's it going to mean in the future, 5, 10 years down the road, 2020, say, to be a race man? Who will be the race men and women of the future, and what will it mean?
I think that for the foreseeable future, there will continue to be ample space within Black America for people who see their primary public responsibility as one aimed at the advancement of African American communities. The term race man is certainly an honorific term within most Black communities with which I'm familiar.
Hmm.
And there are many race men and race women whom I admire, though, you know, there are race men and race women who also concern me because their feelings of loyalty degenerate into group narcissism.
Take apart this Obama phenomenon from the standpoint of race. What is he doing to the notion of a race man, a man's responsibility to, as Duke Ellington said, my people, but my people were all people. In Barack Obama's case, it seems to me that it comes very profoundly out of his life that we are one people.
I think that's true, and I think that he has answered this. He has said, he's unequivocal. You know, what are you, Barack Obama? I mean, he's unequivocal. He says, I'm Black. I'm an African American. And he has shown time and time and time again that he feels in his bones the pains that Black people have felt, feels within his bones a commitment to the struggle for racial justice, racial equality. He knows this. He feels this. He's Black, but that's not all he is. He also wants to be president of the United States. And I think that he's a guy who he really is showing that, you know, you don't have to be just one thing. He has been a race man in his life. He can also be something else in his life. And I think that he's showing, you know, he's really showing the capacity of a Black American to play multiple roles at the highest, you know, at the heights of American society, political society in the United States. When I've seen him speak in, you know, Black churches, is he being a race man? Yeah, he's being a race man. He is certainly ministering in a wide variety of ways to his predominantly Black audience and speaking in a way which they can certainly understand and appreciate. And then, you know, he gets on a plane and he goes to Iowa and he ministers to a very different audience just as authentically. He's not, you know, he's not changing himself. He's just showing that he's a many-faceted person. Can Black people be many-faceted? Yeah, Black people can be many-faceted. Why shouldn't Black people be many-faceted?
What do we say 10 years from now? Well, we can't project.
Let me just say, you asked about this moment. I say this to people. South Carolina, what happened in South Carolina was absolutely remarkable. And people ought to have some sort of historical memory. People ought to remember that as recently as 1948, Black people in South Carolina were formally, explicitly, expressly excluded from voting in white Democratic Party white primaries.
Mm.
I know that. I mean, that really hits home with me because my father went to see Thurgood Marshall argue the case that struck down the white primary in South Carolina. The name of the case is Rice versus Elmore, 1948. That's not that long ago.
60 years. Amazing.
Not that long ago. And here we have the, you know, fully half of the electorate, black, you know, Democratic electorate, African-American in South Carolina, and you had the Democratic electorate in South Carolina choosing a black American to be the standard party for the Democratic Party. I mean, if you just take a look at 20th century and now 21st century, if you take a look at American history, this is South Carolina. You know, this is where the Civil War began, remember? Absolutely remarkable. When I saw the man on the street interviews with all sorts of South Carolinians in front of the State House. I mean, that's a State House where you've got, you know, Strom Thurmond, where you've got Ben Tillman, where you got the Confederate flag flying. And there you have Barack Obama seriously contending. I mean, seriously contending. The Clintons are on tenderhooks. They're fighting as hard as they can because this Barack Obama phenomena is for real. And you have, you know, you have white people, lots of white people, fervently, not just a little bit, but fervently backing this African-American. I think it's an extraordinary moment in American history. Absolutely. I think that the psychology of this country has been dramatically changed, and I think changed forever by what has occurred in the past few months. However this thing ultimately ends up, the whole conception of what is possible in the United States has been changed.
I love to feel your excitement about it. I mean, it's very touching, Randy.
Well, I mean, I think that what has occurred in the hearts and minds, certainly of black people, but white people. You see these white people in Iowa bringing their little, you know, children, little boys and little girls, waiting in line so that their child can shake hands with Barack Obama. See these young people looking up at Barack Obama, wide-eyed and admiringly. In the history of the United States, this is absolutely remarkable. And I don't think it's a bad thing for people to feel good about it. I think it's a good thing for people who ought to feel good about it. People ought to feel good about it, and they should allow themselves to feel good about it. And I think,
why not?
I think some people are actually scared. It is so remarkable that I think it has triggered a sort of "it can't be" reflex. It can't be. Something horrible is in the offing if this is happening. And I really do feel that there's some people, including some black people. I mean, after all, you know, there's some black people who say they're not going to vote for Barack Obama because they're scared of what will happen if he wins. You know, I mean, I don't want to be too apocalyptic about it, but there's some black people who feel that way. There is this, you know, real deep-seated fear of certain, you know, of change. Even people who want change can be afraid when change sort of steals up on them. And I think this has stolen up on people.
Is it a generational thing? Is it a matter of habits of thinking? Do you notice a difference among...
Yes.
Among your law students, for example?
Well, I was going to say, in general, my sense is that younger people of all racial backgrounds have a much keener sense of the possible and a much more open sense of the possible. I think it's my sense is that it's the older people who are shaking their heads. Listen, I've talked with some older black people who pulled me aside and said the following. You know good and well these white people are not going to allow this black man to be president of the United States. I mean, you know, there is that sort of feeling of sort of ultimate futility. And I think younger people are saying, why not? I'm with the young people. Why not?
I'm with the people who are just astonished at the regenerative energy inside a free society. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but who would have believed that from a feeling of degradation and general besmirchment of this sort of late imperial Bush administration, we could feel holy mackerel, the last best hope of Earth and all that.
I think it's true. And, you know, it's worth saying that, you know, people say, and there's a lot of truth to, you know, we've been in a conservative social era. But in this conservative social era, we've had two back-to-back black secretaries of state, you know, of the United States. That's not, you know, a token position. We've had and now this guy is, you know, contending for the presidency of the United States. Something, you know, quite dramatic, I think, is afoot. This is happening even against the backdrop of reaction.
Hmm.
Against that backdrop, you have this fella who is going to have to confront the double and triple and double, triple, triple whammy of race. So do you talk about race? Do you not talk about race? There are pitfalls if you do. There are pitfalls if you don't. There is, you know, some people are going to say if you mention race, well, you're playing the race card. Then you're going to have other people, if you don't say anything about race, you're being evasive, and you're being a sellout. My sense is that he has been very forthright and has handled himself wonderfully throughout this, you know, grueling campaign. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about Barack Obama, but, you know, there's others. I mean, there was Deval Patrick. And we're speaking in New England. Deval Patrick, made out of, as far as I'm concerned, similar cloth, similar appeal, a similar sort of sensibility, generates a feeling of confidence, a feeling of comfortableness, of ease with white people. Again, you know, in some black quarters, there is real suspiciousness that arises when a black person makes white people feel comfortable.
Hmm.
You know, why do these white people feel so comfortable around this brother? The brother must be soft peddling things. But these are guys who, you know, both have civil rights backgrounds, both have quite clearly demonstrated in their own lives very concretely that they are willing to contribute to the fight for racial justice, yet both of them have been very adept at getting all sorts of people, including obviously lots of white people, to trust them very deeply. That's something different in American life, and I think a change is afoot. A deep change is afoot.
Randy Kennedy, thank you for talking about it.
Thank you.